Now I'm joined on the line by CEO of Rebosis and the founder of the Billion Group, Sisa Ngebulana. Sisa, thank you so much for your time.
That's a pleasure.
A lot of young people tend to be interested in the property markets, and they look at you as a benchmark of success and somebody who's done really well, and various other people. But then the one key question that we always get here at MoneyWeb, especially from some of those who have questions, is how did it all start for him? Where did he get the money in that entire journey? So let's take it back to the beginning. How did you get involved in the property space?
Thanks for that. I think for me, it's really, it cuts across that, not just property. One thing I've realized and I've taken out of my experiences and how I started is when you have a dream and you have a goal and you have a vision, nothing can stand on your way. Sometimes we don't realize that there's something within us that's greater than us, than we think. And that's where it starts. You know, you've got to believe that you can do it. Mm. There's no point of even starting anything if you don't believe you can do it. So courage is quite important. Well, you know, for me, it was quite simple. So I started off with building of homes. So I, you know, bought a little plot back in time, Kalami Estate, and developed a home. In the natural, I didn't have the means to be able to raise the bond. I just started out as a young legal advisor. And what motivated me to do that was because I had a challenge in life. Besides student loans, I also had loans of venture that didn't work out, and I had to pay those loans back. And I had to do something else. So, you know, sometimes in life events, you take them for granted, but those challenges are very necessary panacea to us becoming bigger and greater than we think. And that's really how I started, and bought a plot. I couldn't afford the bond on the plot to be able to build a house, so I got two other colleagues. On the pretext that we'll be living in the house together as cousins. But then we were able to raise a bond for the house of about 250,000, together with a plot of about 25,000, call it a bond of about 300,000. And I shared the profits on the, you know, I brought the two other colleagues on the basis that I'll share the profit 50-50 with them. And I developed and I finished the house within 4 months with full commitment to making it work. And 2 months later, we sold it, later than what I planned, as usual, because we all start optimistic. And we sold it for a nice profit, for about 450,000. And beyond that, I was able to buy the plot and do everything else myself. And that's really what then set me on a course to my business.
You were talking earlier, you mentioned having courage. And I wonder if you received some of those life principles from your grandparents who you grew up with?
Oh, yeah, fantastic. So I think, you know, I was blessed in the sense that I had people who were really hard workers and who looked after quite a big family. And I was a grandchild. My old man had passed on when I was only about 2 years old. And I was one of the many grandchildren. And I just saw how hard they were prepared to work and do things for people who were quite distant family members that we grew up with and that sort of thing. And that just gave me a sense of compassion about life in general. And to just seeing them, you know, watching how they the one time you have nothing and the next you have abundance. And it just made me appreciate the nature of business that, you know, there'll be ups and downs, and it's just about that spirit of never giving up, and things will work out for the good in the end, and it's all about your resolve and the determination you have to make it work. So I was blessed in the sense that I grew up behind the counter at the grocery shop that they owned every day. Literally, I had no time to play with other kids, and I had a little brick field as well, and I was always at the brick field. Packing ovens and, you know, delivering bricks on building sites and that sort of thing. And I suppose that's how property rubbed into me, because I was able at a young age to work out numbers for people who wanted to buy bricks and build homes and that sort of thing in villages. And I was able to work that on the back of cigarette match and how much cement they'll need sand and, you know, how much labor from the builders that we procured ourselves would be. And so that really got me into property.
Right.
At a young age, and I appreciated profit better than any other thing.
A part of what I'm hearing as well, which I think is like an underlying message, is that your grandparents did everything to keep you busy, Because busy is a good thing. It keeps you out of trouble. And a lot of people who do what they do currently, whether it's the way you earn a living or you run some big successful company, all attest to how their parents did as much as they can to keep them busy. And that sort of got into their system and their psyche and that work ethic. Let's talk about a young CISA. What was he like? Was he curious? Did he always think that he'd be in property? Because I know you studied law. So was that always where you wanted to be?
So, in essence, you know, you look back sometimes in life and you realize there's always signs sometimes that you can always pick up when people grow up. And I think the young CISA in me, I just remember myself being very, very resourceful, working always, doing things back, even when I was back kind of 7 months at Gay Class now. I was already building counters for the shop at the back, making a lot of noise for people starting early in the morning and that sort of thing. I had a very courageous grandmother who used to wake us up very early in the morning from 4 o'clock. We used to have bakeries arriving 4 o'clock in the rural areas because bakeries would leave town and our village was closer to town, so we were the first we hit in the morning for the bakeries because they had to deliver on lots of villages around. And those heaters, at 4 o'clock in the morning, you have to wake up for bakery and then clean the shop. And then by 6 o'clock, you're ready to open the shop to sell hot bread and that sort of thing for people to have in their homes. So, yeah, I grew up quite a resourceful child. Mm-hmm. And that for me is something that, you know, I appreciate today. But when you grow up as a child, you don't really see the potential upside for you in life in general by just getting that culture in you. And I think, look, until high school, when it comes to academics, it wasn't the top priority because we're all in business. And it's only at university, when I went to university, my grandmother had saved up the last 5 years for a few of us who went to university, and she said, look, I only have money for you guys for the first year. Mm. If you can't have sufficient marks or good marks to enable you to have a student loan, or because a lot of students don't really have bursaries, but bursary, the others were studying other disciplines, unfortunately, that's all you ever achieve your first year, and you may end up as a driver in life, or whatever the case. So for me, that was quite a, I think it was a turning point in my life, and I was able to translate that into my actions. And I started really working hard in life. And for the first time, I had straight A's in my first year. And it's because I just, you know, it touched me quite deep, knowing that this person would sacrifice their lives for me to have a better future. And they really and honestly wanted me to make it to university, and they saved up the last 5 years to just afford the fees for the first year. And beyond that, I was able to have student loans from Stanbank, and I was able to carry myself in life. But I think that's where the culture of hard work when it comes to reading and applying the knowledge that you gain out of that in real life, in reading relevant things that will progress in your life. So I think it was fortuitous that I did law, because my grandmother, you know, used to have lots of arguments together, and she put my points across in a logical manner, and she said, you make a good lawyer, and that's what you want to study. And yeah, that's how I ended up in law. But that's been quite indispensable in my life in many ways, because that helped me with decisive thinking. It helped me with, you know, being able to deal with things, knowing what the consequences are. And again, you know, when I did that, because I excelled with my results, more particularly in ophthalmology degree. I was able to be placed in a top law firm. I was in a program because of my results that placed me as a top law firm in Cape Town. And when I got there, the other fellow candidate attorneys were already CAs, some of them. And I was always a curious child. And I thought, geez, these guys have an advantage to me. And I thought, geez, let me do a conversion course. So I registered a conversion course. And that brought me to understand world of economics, financial management, accounting, and that sort of thing, which was really quite exciting for me. I mean, it was quite a hard task doing articles and doing that. But again, that sense of curiosity that you mentioned just proved quite indispensable in my life, because to this day, I mean, I specialized in finance as a lawyer thereafter. I was with Eskom for about 7 years. I ended up the last 3 years in their treasury because treasury had been my client all along. I had done a lot of deals for them. And I traded money markets, capital markets, and headed structured finance. And I was able to just get introduced to a very different world, which complemented my legal skills quite amazingly, and without which today, I think I wouldn't do half the things I do today with ease. without that background. So it's really, again, it goes back perhaps to that curiosity and also willingness to roll up your sleeves, work hard with discipline. Discipline is the most important, I suppose, because you do these things, when you do these things and trying to earn knowledge with curiosity, you have to discipline yourself to allocate the time accordingly.
Yeah.
Because I've had to do these things while working at the same time and studying further and that sort of thing. So it kind of worked for me in that way. But you know, when you go through all of this, you know, I've gone through quite a lot in terms of, you know, putting so much into my body. I would have blackouts and I would have all sorts of things, most particularly in business, the things that and the risks I was undertaking in business that materialized at different points in my life. And you look back and you realize, you know, I always make the example that sometimes you see on a river shore a nice pebble, and it looks so beautiful, but actually you have no idea of the thousands of years it's been knocked around down the river. Because I used to look when I grew up thinking, why do I have so many challenges? Other people don't seem to have so many challenges in my life. And my challenges just always seem greater than everybody else. But you look back in your life later, you realize the reason why your challenges are greater is because you're destined for greater things.
Yeah.
So simple as that. Yeah.
When you sit alone and you have those moments of reflection, those quiet moments where you take stock of your achievements in your life, do you remember a moment where you knew that you were on the right track with what you're doing right now?
Yeah, I think, look, funny enough, I've always had the sense that maybe I may be on the wrong track, instead of against knowing I'm on the right track. Because you know, I think my determination and courage to overcome and achieve what I've set out to do was far greater than the doubts I had about not achieving. But when certain risks materialized, I always thought, geez, am I not maybe just pushing this? Maybe this is just heading the wrong way. But I think there was always something inside me that was just greater, a force that just kept pushing me. And I only ascribe that to God because I'm a very spiritual person. And I knew that, you know, the course is right because I had that inner thing that just kept saying, you're not going to give up. It's not about time to give up. I've had many events where, you know, an ordinary person would have given up. When the worst that could happen has happened, you know, and you're down on your knees and you think, you know, what could be worse than this? But you then realize, you know what, you are greater than this. And somehow something just starts growing inside you and you think you're going to get out of this. You got yourself into this and only yourself will get yourself out of this. And that grows inside. And obviously you develop mechanisms to be able to self-motivate in life because you realize you're on your own.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we all think there are people out there, there are, you know, tools and places where you can go to really get that. But you've just got to train yourself. It's a lonely road out there. And it's a lonely road in the sense that, yes, you can have mentors, you can have people that you can confer to, but in the end, it's your decision, it's your life, and you've got to stand up to it. You've got to know that the answers are in your hands. You've just got to dig deeper inside. You will find out the answers.
So a lot of people I know that I speak to, when they hear your name, they think property. And I'm just, you know, just listening to you and the work that you've done and your experience and your curiosity. Is there an industry outside of property that right now you're finding very interesting and exciting? And it's just, it just might be that one thing that you might venture into in the next few years or so.
It's interesting you ask this because... Yeah, there's so many things I'd love to do in my life. I'm a very curious person. And, you know, from time to time I ask myself, am I doing something because I can derive wealth from it or make money out of it, or would I do it because it pleases me to do it? And I think my answer would always be, I want to do something that pleases me, that challenges me. You know, and I always make the example that I used to do residential development. And I enjoyed it, and it made good money for me, and I could have stayed there, but I needed something that's more challenging beyond that because it became monotonous. I was doing the same thing over and over again, and I started commercial, and I realized also there I became just a landlord. People are in the building, you collect the money, and so what, beyond that. And then I realized I've got to do something that's more exciting than that, that will challenge me and challenge my intellect. And I went to retail. And in retail, also, I got into doing large shopping centers that are fashion-dominated and that are dominant in their areas and that sort of thing. But that requires a lot of skillful thinking in terms of market research, understanding the dynamics of the people that live around it, and who would be a shopper and that sort of thing, which then informs the tenant mix, informs the design of the shopping center, the parking, ingress and egress into the malls, the road infrastructure, whole range of things that you can only know once you understand and you research the patterns of people, the income levels, and their existing patterns, you know. And for me, that was intriguing. It was really exciting. And just seeing it to fruition, and you walk there one day and you see this establishment with volumes and volumes, thousands of people walking up and down the aisles. It's something that, for me, it's just very special. And you know, I can relate that back again to a life when I was a trader and I traded in money markets and I had nice bonuses. So I stayed there. It was comfortable. So I earned a good living and, you know, like any other young man, drive a nice sports car, whatever the case. But it wasn't to be. You know, I just needed something that's more challenging. I've been doing what I'm doing. As you know, I've been running two companies for the last 6 years, Billion, growing as a developer. And the doses, which when we listed, were assets of about 2.5 billion. Growing them the last 6 years, it's only now when I announced my retirement and appointed the new CEO, Andile, a very competent guy. And I thought to myself, you know, I've actually been insane running two companies for so long. And because Billion, on the other hand, is just has become equally big as Rebosis, but it's private. And Rebosis, I looked and I thought, I've actually grown this company sixfold in the last 6 years, which means every year I was doubling up the assets. And I've never missed one focus I gave on the market in terms of income growth. And that requires a lot of discipline and hard work. Every day, literally, you've got to put up the hours and keep 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and you have to be in the office by 7, 8 to lead by example so that people know that you're here without anything else. It's quite a task. And I thought, actually, it's insane to think I would have done that. Yeah. And now that I'm able to focus on my life, and I'm busy appointing a CEO for Billion as well, because it really is a very large company as well that does need a dedicated CEO, just thinking, I've got so much dreams. There's so much that I want to achieve in life. I want things to challenge me that are new in my life. So I've invested money in apps, different apps that lots of youngsters used to approach me. And I'm hungry for knowledge. And, you know, you read things, you read about the fact that, even shopping, for that matter, may be obsolete in the physical form in the next 10 to 20 years. And, you know, with the internet shopping threats and that sort of thing, cars on the road may be a thing of the past for somebody to be driving a car, because not only do we move out of gas, as you know, today into electric cars, but also they'll be self-driven. And there'll be a need for you to be buying a car. And, you know, car parks will be developed into normal parks, you know, for people to... against, because nobody's going to want to be parking cars. It'll be like the Uber, but it'll be a self-driven car. And you can order any car you want, and you'll get to from point A to point B. Why can't we be part of this kind of tech? Because this is a different world now that's evolving in our eyes, and you know, can't sit there and not be part of it. You know, so just whole range of things that I'd really like to get involved in, because for me, they're exciting. It'd be nice to be part of it, and just to. I mean, I learned the other day that my daughter wanted to do law in the U.S., and then I started researching this, and I realized in the U.S. there's a new app, IBM Dotson, where if you have a legal problem, you go research, say you go put your circumstances and the advice you need, and give 90% accuracy of legal advice than a human can. And now it's predicted 80% of U.S. lawyers may not be required in the next 5 years. And it's just quite shocking for me to tell you this, because she thought this is quite a cool thing to, you know, to go and be alone. And now suddenly she might go to something that could be obsolete. So it's just very interesting. Everything around us is changing quite rapidly. And you look at people that, they are not interested to not indulge themselves in knowing what's gonna happen in the world around them, and they'll be caught unaware of the fast changing world we find ourselves in. So, in a roundabout way, for me, there's a lot that's ahead of me. I'm a dreamer and somebody who really wants, who's hungry for knowledge, would like to, do new things.
Based on that answer, you know, that there's still a lot that you need to do. For those young people who actually are looking at the property industry and want to replicate something you've done and perhaps even take it to the next level, what would be that one key piece of advice that you would give them based on the learnings that you've acquired in the property and the way you view business and investment in the world?
I think first thing I would say, if you have a dream for something, you've got to believe you can do it. The fact that you can conceive it, I'm sure people have heard these words, if you can conceive, you can do it. But step by step, so start small. I think a lot of young people sometimes think must happen overnight. Yes, we do have stories, the Mark Zuckerbergs and all sorts of people in the U.S. Who, you know, young tech guys who've made billions overnight. But it doesn't happen to 99.9% of people. So the reality is you've got to start small. More especially, property is a long-term game. I had a, you know, when I started out, I didn't have perhaps a 20-year vision to think I'd be where I am today. But the reality is I started having a small vision where I started, and I knew that I'll get somewhere one day. And one thing led to the other. So you've just got to know that in order to get to a certain point, you've got to start somewhere small and build up from there. Because that knowledge will be indispensable one day. Every step of the way, when you look back, you realize that it is so necessary in your life. Because one day when you've done it all, you will not make any silly mistake which could lead you to losing. Because you've had stories where people just lose it all. But it's because maybe they never had all the steps along the way to be able to make wise calls at a later stage in life.
And that was Sisa Ngebulana, who is the CEO of Rebosis.